Okay, so we are going to start from the very bottom of Nun Ahmed Beys, two lines from the bottom. Okay, so... one second. Okay, so the Gemara tells us, B'nei Chozai Nagei D'mafer Sheikhala Me'aruza. So there was I'm sorry, what? Everyone good?
Starting.
Okay, yeah, we're starting from the bottom of Nun Ahmed Beys, two lines from the bottom. Okay, so the Gemara says that the people of the city of Chozai had a practice to separate challah, to do afreshes challah, from rice dough. Now, of course, we know that rice is not one of the five grains. It's not really chayav in hafreshes challah. So the Gemara says, Asuva Amr Lila Rav Yosef. So they told Rav Yosef about this. So Amr Lahu, so he said to them, Nechla Zar Ba'apayu. He told these other chachamim, some non-Kohen should go in front of these people and eat rice dough in front of them without separating challah, to essentially reinforce the fact that this type of dough is not in fact chayav in hafreshes challah. So the Gemara asks, Esive Abaye, Dvar Mamutarim Ba'achem Noagu Bohen Isriyat Rash. So Abaye asked on this psak of Rav Yosef, he says, what right do I have to go and eat rice dough without hafreshes challah in front of the people of Chozai? There's a general principle that the Gemara develops in several places, which is that if certain people are machmir about a certain thing, even if me'ikar adin it's mutter, even if I'm meikel about that, I'm not allowed to do that activity or that action in front of them. So if the people of Chozai are machmir for whatever reason to separate challah from rice dough, what right do I have to go ahead and eat rice dough without a fresh challah in front of them? So the Gemara says, no. Amar lo v'lav miyidmer ala amar Rav Chista b'kusai. Didn't Rav Chista say that halacha, that notion that you're not allowed to be makel on a halacha about which others are machmir, that was only true by the Kusim, by the Samaritan? So the Gemara says, what's the reason for that? Kusai my taima bishum de misarche milsa hanach in shenami sarche milsa. The whole reason why Chazal made this takana by the Kusim is because the fear was that the Kusim would misunderstand or misapply or overextend the application of the kula to other areas. So, for example, if I started eating dough without hafreshes challah, in other words, rice dough without hafreshes challah, the kusim may misunderstand that and now start eating all dough without hafreshes challah, which is obviously a problem. So the Gemara says that the people of Chozai are essentially in the same boat. They're in the same category where we have this concern that if you let one thing, you know, if you're makel by one thing, they may end up being makel by several other areas of halacha where they're not supposed to be mako. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elo amar ravashi chazinon I ruban orezachle lo nechla zarba apayu dilma mishtak chatoras chalaminayu vi ruban doganachle nechla zarba apayu dilma ase liafrushe menachiv alapater menapater alachiv. So the Gemara basically says that you have to do an assessment of the people of the city of Chozai. If the majority of those the people of the city do in fact eat rice bread and rice dough, then it's not a good idea to eat that dough in front of them without hafreshes challah, because it's going to lead to a michshol. Because if they now think that you don't have to do hafreshes challah on rice dough, they're going to ultimately think that you also don't require hafresha on any type of dough. However, if the majority of people of the city do not eat rice dough, it's just a minority of people, so then it's actually better to dafka eat the rice dough in front of them without hafresha, because this way you reinforce the fact that you're supposed to separate hafreshes challah specifically from those types of grains that are chayiv in hafreshah, the five grains, as opposed to something like rice. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Gufa, Dvar mamutar b'achirim no'aguba in iser i'atar rashay lahatirim b'fnayen, am Rav Chista b'kusai askinen. So again, as we pointed out in the Gemara earlier, Rav Chista qualified this statement where the Gemara says that you're not allowed to be makil about something for which others are machmir. That is only regarding the kusim, because as we said earlier, the kusim are going to overextend and misapply the halacha. So the Gemara asks, v'chulei amalo, does that mean to say that others who are not considered kusim, that this concept does not apply? Meaning to say, if others are machmir about a certain thing and I'm mekel, does that mean that I'm not allowed to do it in front of them if they're not kusim? The Gemara says, v'hasanya, rochatzin shnei achin ke'echad, v'ein rochatzin shnei achin b'kvol, u'maiseh b'yehuda v'hila banav shal Rabban Gamliel, sh'rochatzu shneim ke'echad b'kvol, v'lo'aza le'en kol ha'medina, amru mi'amenu lo ra'inu kach, v'nishmat hilo v'y So this is story number one. The Gemara is going to quote several stories that seem to contradict this principle. So the first story is regarding these two brothers, Hillel and Yehuda, the sons of Rabban Gamliel. And the Gemara says that me'ikar adin, two brothers are permitted to shower together. But there was a gzera that was made in the city of Kvol that said that two brothers are not supposed to shower together. So one time, these two brothers were showering together in the city of Kvol, and the people started making fun of them or mocking them or whatever. They said, you know, it's very strange. We've never seen this before. So instead of telling the people of Kvol that it's actually mutter for two brothers to shower together, Hillel decided to just kind of slip out, go to the outer chamber of the bathhouse instead of getting into a fight, or instead of telling them that their psak was incorrect, he just decided to leave and, you know, kind of drop the whole situation. That's story number one. Then the Gemara says number two, Yotzim Bekur Dekison B'Shabes, Vein Yotzim Bekur Dekison B'Shabes B'Veire. There was a takana made in the city of Beire not to walk outside on Shabbos wearing these overly large shoes. We'll see in the Gemara why that Gzera was instituted, but everywhere else that Gzera was never instituted. And the Gemara says, "Umaisa bihudav Hillel, banav sharam gamliel shiyatsu bekur dekison b'Shabbos b'Veire v'lo azal liana medina v'amru miyaminu lo ra'inu kach v'shamtum v'nasnum liavden v'lo ratzu lomer lehem mutar natem." The same two brothers are involved in this story here. The Gemara says that Yehuda and Hillel, the sons of Rabban Gamliel, were involved in the same incident. They were wearing these large shoes while walking in the city of Beire on Shabbos, and everyone started mocking them and making fun of them for doing this, and they said, "We've never seen anyone do this before." So instead of telling the people of Beire that it's actually mutter to wear these shoes on Shabbos and that their psak was incorrect, they said, "You know what, we're not gonna confuse them." So they took their shoes off and gave it to their avadim. Then the Gemara has story number three.
The problem is,
we'll see in the Gemara. It's an issue of that maybe the shoe's going to fall off. You may have to carry it. Arba'amos, we'll see in a second in the Gemara. Okay, then the Gemara says a third halacha. V'yoshen al safsali nachrim b'shabes ve'in an yoshen al safsali nachrim b'shabes ba'ako. That again, me'ikra, then you're allowed to sit on the bench of a non-Jew on Shabbos, but in Akko, they made a gzera not to do so. And again, we'll see in the Gemara, it has to do with mekachumemkar, because it looks like you're doing business on Shabbos. U'maisa b'rabim shimum ben gamliel she'yoshen al safsali nachrim b'shabes ba'ako ve'lo'azo al lo kol ha'medino amrum yaminu lo ra'inu kach nishman al gabi karka ve'lo ratzo lomer lehen mutar. So again, in this story, Rabban Gamliel was the one. Rabban Shimon Gamliel was the one who was sitting on the non-Jewish bench in Akko. And instead of telling the people of Akko that it's really mutter, he just decided to go sit on the ground. So again, the point of all of these stories is that you see from here that this principle that if others are machmir that you can't be mekel, it's not only true by Kusim, it's true by all these other places, by Beire and Akko and again all the cities that we mentioned in the Gemara. It sounds like this principle should apply as well. So the Gemara says no. B'nei Medina Hayam. The Gemara says no, that since these people live in Chutz La'aretz and they don't have a lot of rabbis around, so we treat them as if they were Kusim. Again, that goes back to what we saw in the Gemara earlier. The reason why this halacha applies to Kusim is because we're afraid they're going to misapply and overextend the halacha. So apparently the same concern applied for these people as well. So the Gemara now clarifies. So again, I understand why they made the takana in Akko not to sit on the bench of a non-Jew, because it looks like you're engaged in business on Shabbos. And again, I know why they made a gzira in the city of Beire not to wear the large shoes on Shabbos, because it may slip off and you come to carry it for Amos and Rosh Hashanah. But El Rochtzin, my time, hello, why was it that in the city of Kvol they made a gzira the two brothers are not allowed to shower together? So the Gemara says, Kid Asanya, Im Hakol Adam Rochit Chutz Mi Ave V'Chamev V'Valimo V'Alachoso, V'Rabbi Huda Matir So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, Me'ikar adin, a person is allowed to shower with anybody else, except for with your father, with a father-in-law, with your mother's husband, assuming that that's not also your father, and then balachoso is your brother-in-law. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda says it's permissible for one to help bathe his father or his mother's husband. That's because of kibud av, or kibud aim. But in the city of Kvol, they made a gzera that two brothers are not allowed to shower together as a gzera, lest it lead to a brother and a brother-in-law to two brothers-in-law showering together. So even though Me'ikar Adin, two brothers are allowed to shower together, but there was a gzera in the city of Kfol not to do that, lest it lead to brothers-in-law showering together. Then the Gemara says Tana Talmud lo yirchatz imrabo v'imrabo tzarech lo mutter. And similarly, a student is not supposed to help bathe his rebbe unless the rebbe is old and frail and fragile and needs his help. Then obviously it's going to be mutter. Okay. Then the Gemara says ki asa rabba bar berchana achal diatra. So there was an incident where one time Rabba Bar Barchan, who lived in Eretz Yisrael, came to Bavel. And he was eating what's called diatra. Basically, there are two types of fat in an animal. The fat, there's the rounded fat that's in the shape of a bow. That fat is usur me'ikar adin. That fat is usur mido oraisa to eat. But then this other fat called the diatra is the straight fat that's in the shape of a bowstring. That fat is mutter me'ikar adin, but there was a minhag in Bavel not to eat that fat. So Rabba Bar Barchan lived in Eretz Yisrael, so he was not bound by that minhag. So he was eating this fat, which was mutter technically to eat. So when these two Amorim walked in on him, Rav Avira Sava and Rabba Bered Ravuna, he hid the fat away from them. So when these two Amorim told Abaye about that, he said to them that Rabba Bar Bar Chana is treating you like the Kusim, because he's basically saying that he doesn't, in other words, he thinks that you're going to misunderstand or misapply or overextend the halacha, and that's why he hid the fat away from you. So now the Gemara asks, for Rabba Bar Bar Chana, how could Rabba Bar Bar Chana eat this fat in Bavel? Doesn't that go against the Mishnah? The Mishnah we saw earlier says that if a person is traveling from one location to another, he has to adapt the chumras of both places. So in this case, Rabba was going to Bavel, and Bavel they were machmir to not eat this type of fat. So what right does he have to eat it here? So the Gemara says, no. Amar Abaye hanimile mi Bavel of Bavel u me Eretz Yisrael li Eretz Yisrael inami mi Bavel li Eretz Yisrael. So the first answer the Gemara gives, Abaye says that notion that the Mishnah says that you have to be machmir from, in other words, when you travel to a new city, you have to adapt the chumras of the place from which you left and the place to which you just arrived. That's only true either within Eretz Yisrael or within two cities in Bavel, or when you travel from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. But when you travel from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, it doesn't apply. Why not? Because the chachamim of Eretz Yisrael were considered to be superior and greater talmidei chachamim than the ones in Bavel. Therefore, it's really the people of Bavel who are bound to follow the psakim of Eretz Yisrael, but not the other way around. So if you lived in Eretz Yisrael and your psak was that this fat was permissible to eat, you're not obligated to start being machmir and following the psakim of the people of Bavel. That's the first answer. Then the Gemara says, Rav Ashi Amar, afilu tema me'eretz Yisrael Bavel, lo, kevan, I'm sorry, the Gemara says, afilu tema me'eretz Yisrael Bavel, hanimile hecha de'ein daito lachzor, v'rabba bar bar chana daito lachzor. This second answer is very, very relevant in halacha as we'll talk about and in the course of this daf, where the Gemara says that this halacha that a person is bound to follow the chumrah of the place that he arrived is only if he's planning on moving there. So in other words, if Rabba Bar Bar Chana was planning to move to Bavel, then he would have been bound to follow their menagim. But he was planning to go back to Eretz Yisrael, so he was just visiting. So because he was just visiting, the Gemara says he was not bound to follow their menagim. And again, this is going to have a lot of spillover to other areas of halacha, but like whether you know about keeping Yantif Sheni and things like that, which we'll get to in the course of this daf. Okay, then the Gemara says, "Amar le Rabba Bar Bar Chana livnei bini lo tocha lo befanei velo shelo befanei." Ani shira isias Rabbi Yochanan she'achal kedaihu Rabbi Yochanan lismocha lo befanei v'shelo befanav atolo raiso so lo tocha bein befanei bein shelo befanei. So Rabba Bar Bar Chana made the following comment to his son. He said, "I who saw Rabbi Yochanan eat this type of fat, this diatra that we spoke about earlier, so he says I'm allowed to consume this fat whether Rabbi Yochanan is around or not, because since I saw him eating it, I know that this psak is true. I know that the psak is correct. But you never saw Rabbi Yochanan eat it. You're just relying on what I'm telling you. So you have no right to eat the fat, even when I'm around. Even when you see me eating the fat, you're not allowed to eat it. Because I, who saw Rabbi Yochanan, I witnessed it with my own eyes. It made enough of an impression on me that I'm allowed to eat the fat, whether he's around or not. But you, who never saw Rabbi Yochanan, you are not allowed to eat this fat at all." Gemara just points out, upliga didei adidei. This ruling that Rabba said to his son seems to contradict a different thing that Rabba told his son. To Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, sachli Rabbi Yochanan ben Elazar, pamachas nechna. This is a completely unrelated area of halacha, but the principle is the same. The Gemara here is discussing what's known as svichim. Svichim is a very important halacha when it comes to Shemitah, where the Torah tells us, and again we'll see what the source for this is in a second, the Torah tells us, obviously we know that you're not allowed to plant or harvest to really do anything agricultural during the Shemitah year. One of the things that the Pesukim tell us is that one is also not allowed to consume what are called Svichim. Svichim are basically things that grow on their own during Shemitah. Even though you didn't plant, let's say you planted something in the sixth year, which is obviously Mutter, but it only starts growing during the seventh year, so there is a din that you're not allowed to eat. And again, whether it's Doreis or Dorabanan, we'll see as we go on. It sounds like, as we'll see in a second from the Gemara, that may actually be a problem Mida Oraisa. However, the Gemara says that there is one exception to that rule, which is when it comes to Kruv are cabbages. So eating cabbages that grew on their own, the Gemara says, that would technically, that was mutter according to Rabbi Akiva, according to Rav Shimon ben Yochai. Again, we'll see in the Gemara in a second why that should be so. But either way, the Gemara basically says that Rabba Bar Bar Chana made the following statement to his son. He said, "I, who saw Rabbi Yossi and Rav Shimon ben Yochai eat these cabbages that grew on their own during Shemitah, I have the right to consume them whether they're around or not. I can eat these cabbages that grew on their own all the time. But you, who never saw Rav Shimon ben Yochai eat these things, so you can only eat it when I'm around eating the cabbages, but when I'm not around eating them, you're not allowed to." So this psak seems to differ slightly from the previous one with the fat. Because in the case of the fat, Rabba said to his son, you're never allowed to eat the fat under any circumstances, And yet here, in the case of the cabbages that grew on their own during Shemitah, he says, if I'm around and eating them, then you are allowed to eat them. So that, again, the Gemara is not really interested in resolving this question. The Gemara just points out that these two cases seem to differ slightly in the way in which Rabbah explained them to his son. Okay. Then the Gemara continues. The Gemara says, my Rabbi Shimon, what was the statement of Rabbi Shimon that we're referring to regarding the Svichim? The son of Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol ha-Svichim asur.
Yeah. It's kind of contradictory. Wouldn't you say, minhag ha-rotenu bi-adenu, that if my father is doing something, regardless of what the reason he's doing it for, if he has a valid reason...
So that's the logic that the Gemara talks about in the context of Yontif Sheni, which we're going to get to in a little bit, about why we still observe Yontif Sheni today. But the thing is that this particular case regarding the Svichim is actually subject to a machlokas, right? In other words, no one in the Gemara says that a Ben Chutzlaretz doesn't have to keep Yontif Sheni. Everyone agrees that a Ben Chutzlaretz, even though we know the way the calendar is set up, everyone agrees that you have to still keep Yontif Sheni if you live in Chutzlaretz, right? This, the case of the Svichim by Shemitah, is actually a machlokas, as we'll see again regarding the cabbages in particular, as we'll talk about in a second, is actually subject to a machlokas. So it's a little bit different than the case of Yontif Sheni. Okay.
It might be different, but if my father's doing it, why, for whatever reason.
No, because the assumption is that he was relying on a das yachid. In other words, the standard opinion was not this way, as we'll see right now. Okay, so the Gemara explains. My Reb Shimon, Disani, Reb Shimon Omer, Kol Asvichem Asurin Chutz Misviche Krov Shein Kayotze Bahen Biyarek Astadeh, V'Chachamim Om Kol Asvichem Asurin. This is the Machokas that we were just alluding to. According to the Chachamim, all Svichem are Asur. Anything that grows by itself during the Shemitah year, you are not allowed to eat. Whereas according to Reb Shimon, that's true for everything aside from cabbages. Again, why are cabbages different? So the Gemara says, because cabbages, I'm not really so holding in the botany behind this, but the Gemara assumes that cabbages were considered to be like a unique type of a vegetable. There was nothing else that looked like it in the field. Again, the whole issue with Svichim during Shemitah is that if we let you eat something that grew on its own, is that we're afraid that you may come to plant or actually harvest the vegetable itself. So apparently, because the cabbages didn't have anything that were parallel to them, this concern never applied to the cabbages according to Reb Shimon. In fact, the Gemara assumes that Reb Shimon treated these cabbages like fruit. The concept of Svichim only applies to vegetables, not to fruit. So therefore, according to Reb Shimon, this would actually be mutter. And the Gemara points out v'travayu aliba de Rabbi Akiva, and both of these shitos reflect the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Desanya hein lo nizra v'lo ne'esofes tevuasenu. Amar Rabbi Akiva v'chimei acher shein zorin mehecha usven mikan the svichin shehein asurin. So Rabbi Akiva derives this principle of svichin, this idea that you're not allowed to eat the vegetables that grew on their own, from the pasuk in Parshas Bahar. Because when the pasuk in Bahar is discussing what a person's reaction to Shemitah is, so the guy says, you know, how am I going to survive? I can't plant. I can't harvest. So Rabbi Akiva asks, if you can't plant anything, then by definition you can't harvest anything. It seems superfluous. Why does the pasuk have to say, you know, I can't plant and I can't harvest? Of course you can't harvest. You didn't plant anything. So the Gemara says, you see from here that even things that grew on their own that were planted before the Shemitah year are also usher. That's what's being included from the words lo ne'esof, from the words that, you know, when the guy says I can't gather anything. So the Gemara says, b'maykam miflagei. So the Gemara says, Rabban and Savri gazrin and svichei krovatu shar svichei da'alma. Rab Shimon Tzavar lo gazrin and svichei krovatu svichei da'alma. Basically, the machlokas is, does it make sense to impose a gzera de rabbanan on svichei kruv, on cabbages that grow on their own, as a gzera to, you know, that it may lead you to eating other vegetables that grow on their own or not? So that's the machlokas between Rab Shimon and the Chacham. Okay. Then the Mishnah told us, haholich mimakom. So again, as we pointed out in the Mishnah, in the context of malacha on Erev Pesach. Yeah, sorry.
Quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
In yesterday's Shabbos or Sunday, if you have nothing to do with your crops,
yeah,
on make it heifer,
yeah, yeah,
can you avail yourself of that stuff if the public is consuming?
Well, I'm saying you're asking during Shemitah, you're saying, or in general?
Yeah.
Yeah, because in Shemitah, by definition, everything is hefker, right? You don't own any of your stuff during Shemitah. So
then could you go out to your field and
oh, you're saying can you go pick the stuff?
Yes.
So as long as you're not doing something which qualifies as a malacha, so if you're not doing malachas that are agricultural in nature, and you're not doing zoreya, you're not doing kotzer, you're not harvesting, planting. Right? In other words, if you find a bunch of carrots lying on the ground, you want to pick them up in Shemitah, that's fine. You can do that. Now the idea is that you're supposed to leave everything out for, you know, for the Aniyim, for others to take during Shemitah. But yeah, but in theory, you could go, you can go and just pick and pick them up, as long as you're not doing a malacha that's agricultural in nature. Okay, so the Mishnah told us a holeich mimakom. Again, this was discussing the minhagim regarding not doing malacha on Erev Pesach. So we said, right, in other words, again, because we said different cities have different practices about that. So we said, let's say I live in a place A where the minhag is to do malacha, and place B they don't do malacha, or vice versa. So the Mishnah gave all these different variations of what you should do. So the Gemara explains, Bishlama haholeich mimakom sheosin lemakom shein osin nosin alav chomrei makom shehalach l'sham ma'al yishana adam b'mnei hamachlokas v'lo liavid. So I understand in the first case, let's say I live in town A. Town A, they do malacha on Erev Pesach after Chatzos, but in town B, they do not. So I travel to town B. So now when the Mishnah told me that I have to be machmir in both directions, I have to be machmir to follow the new minhag of town B, makes a lot of sense. I can't do malacha. And in that way, the Mishnah said, you're not going to be deviating from the regular minhag hamakom, from the regular practice of that city, and the way that you'll do that is by simply abstaining from doing malacha after chatzos and erev Pesach. However, the Gemara says, "Elam imakom she'in osin lamakom she'osin al yishana adam ebnei machlokas v'ni'avid ha'amar nosin alav chomrei makom shahalach l'sham v'chomrei makom she'yatzam yisham." The problem becomes in the opposite case. The opposite case is where I live in town A. Town A, they don't do malacha after chatzos, but in town B, they do. So in that case, you have two competing factors that are going against you, because on the one hand we said that you can't deviate from the minhag hamakom. So not deviating from the minhag hamakom would dictate that you should be doing malacha after chatzos. So on the other hand, the Mishnah also told us that you have to adapt the chumras of both the place from which you left and the place to which you're arriving. So if the place that you left had a minhag to not do malacha on Erev Pesach, what right do I now have to do malacha when I go to town B? So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar Abaye Areisha. Abaye says, you're right. That statement that we said in the Mishnah that you can't deviate from the minhag hamakom was only referring to the first case, only the case where you go to the place where they don't do malacha. In other words, only if it's going to lead to a chumrah, if it's going to lead to a kula, Abaye says, then you can just throw the minhag hamakom out the window. Then the Gemara says, Rava Amar, no, lo'olam ha'seifa v'hachi ka'amar, ein bezo mibnei shinui ha'machlokas, mai ka'amar, haroa omer malacha asura, meimar amri kama batlani havi b'shuka. Rava says, no, you can even say that this notion of minhag hamakom applies in the second case also, where it could potentially lead to a kula. The only difference is that Rava says, is that if a person sees you not doing malacha, he's not going to automatically say, oh, look, malacha is usher today. Maybe he'll just say, the guy's lazy. Maybe he's just not working because he's lazy, right? You know, the Gemara uses the expression, kama batlani havi b'shuka. Look how many guys are sitting around in the marketplace not doing anything. So it could very well be that malacha is mutter to do, but the fact that he's abstaining from malacha is not going to be, it's not going to, you know, throw people off. You know, in other words, again, they're not going to assume necessarily that malacha is usher just because he's not working. Okay, then the Gemara says, amar li safar le Rebbe Abba. So again, this is the classic Yontif Sheni question. So we of course are well versed in the calendar. We know that technically speaking, you don't need to have Yontif Sheni even in Chutz Laaretz, because we know when Yontif really is. However, when you live in a regular city, so if you're like, in other words, if you live in a city with other people, so then obviously you have to follow what they're doing. So if their minhag is, which we know already from the Gemara and Beitza, based on minhag avasina biyadinu, as Billy was talking about before, that we have to observe Yontif Sheni and Chutz Laaretz. So if you live in a regular city where everyone else is doing that, you obviously have to follow the minhag hamakom. The question is, what if I'm in Chutz Laaretz, but I'm in the middle of the desert for Yontif, for whatever reason. I'm in the middle of nowhere. There's no one around for miles and miles. So the question is, do I have to keep Yontif Sheni in that case? So the Gemara says, Amar Lei, Hachi Amar Ravami, but Yishuv Asher B'Midbar Mutter. The Gemara says, no, if you're in the middle of nowhere and there's mamish nobody around, then technically speaking, you do not have to keep Yontif Sheni. Then the Gemara says, Rav Nosan Bar Asya Azal Mi Bei Rav L'Pumpadisa B'Yontif Sheni Shalat Seres Shamte Rav Yosef. So Rav Nosan Bar Asya one time traveled from Rav's house to Pumpadisa on the second day of Shavuot, so on Yontif Sheni, and Rav Yosef put him into Chirev. He excommunicated him because he violated the Isser of Tchum, of going beyond the Tchum on Yontif Sheni. So Amar Le Abaye Veli Nagdi Mar Negide. So Abaye asked Rav Yosef, why didn't you give him Malkus? Why did you only excommunicate him? So Amar Le, so Rav Yosef said, no, Adifa Avdile, Divim Arava Mimnu Anigda, Divay Baravalu Mimnu Ashamta. So the first answer of the Gemara is that Rav Yosef said it was actually better to give him Malkus than to excommunicate him, because he says, you see how severe the punishment of Malkus is, because in Eretz Yisrael, they only give, in other words, in Eretz Yisrael, they only vote to give people Malkus for violating certain Averos, but not excommunication. So he says that since Malkus is almost like the punishment of the day, that was a decision in Eretz Yisrael to give Malkus, so that's why I give him Malkus instead of excommunicating. That's one answer. Ika da'amre, nagde Rav Yosef. The second version, Rav Yosef actually did give the guy Malkus, so Amar Le'abai In this version, Abai asked him, why didn't you excommunicate him? Because the Gemara tells us that if a person violates Yantav Sheni, he has to be excommunicated. So Amar Lehi said, no. That which we excommunicate people for violating Yantav Sheni, that's only for a regular person. But for a Talmud Chacham, for someone of his stature, so we dafka give him Malkus, and he says that the reason why it's better, again, is because in Eretz Yisrael, they voted, I'm sorry, he says that we put him at the Chayram, because he says that in Eretz Yisrael, they would vote to give Malkus and not Chayram. So he says, you see how much more severe excommunication is than Malkus. The fact that they wouldn't even opt to use it as a punishment in Eretz Yisrael, you see that it's even more severe than Malkus is, and he says, that's why I'm dafka going to excommunicate him as opposed to giving him Malkus.